This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. The Institute was formed in 1988, and the website was launched in the early stages of the development of the Internet. This prayer treatment includes the application of the system of divine metaphysics. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science. She discovered it in 1866. The textbook of Christian Science, entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is a 700-page textbook. The last chapter, number 18, includes 101 pages of verified healings of about every kind of ailment that one could be confronted with. Common statements throughout the testimonies include the fact that the medical profession had no solution, and with no other alternative, many of those testimonies include those who came to Christian Science searching for the answer, and they received it. There are a total of 486 healings from 85 testifiers. The healings were accomplished through their own study of the textbook, without relying on any other assistance or practitioner of any kind whatsoever. On page 146 of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy states that she has reduced divine metaphysics to a system. And on page 330, she states that there are 32 planks to the platform of the system of divine metaphysics, and if they are followed, both in letter and spirit, it will prove the infallibility of divine metaphysics to be effective. This prayer treatment will incorporate the system of divine metaphysics, including the explanation on how you can apply it for an effective healing result. The topic is All Seven Terms for God. Perfection is reality, not imperfection. The system of divine metaphysics is as simple as the system of mathematics is. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 to 9, 4 operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Music also has a system. You know, they have the notes, sharps and flats, they have keys, and they have a system that indicates what is harmonious and what is discordant. And there are several levels of consciousness, just like in mathematics. I just noted the basic. Well, the same with system and divine metaphysics. There's the basic, and there's the more advanced. The basic gives us plenty to work with until one is ready for a more advanced level. Page 115 and 116 gives us the 4 levels of consciousness. It starts out at the lowest level, which is the lowest level of evil. And then it goes to a moral level, and then to a spiritual level, and then to the divine level. What is the thing we need to address in every prayer treatment? A material sense of birth. Because that starts the whole universal belief within one's conscious thought after we do a little searching to the unconscious thought. Nothing can have an influence on us if we, number one, protect ourselves against it, against the unconscious, and actively expose and destroy the conscious evil. We need to be like a river. It doesn't try to go through the rocks. It goes around them. We don't want to go through the evil. We want to recognize them, make the claim, confirm within consciousness that it's unreal, and explain the reason why by using the truth, which is the opposite. So what are the seven terms for God? Because that's the basic foundation, just like the 10 digits and the seven notes in music. The definition of God on page 465 of the textbook: God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Page 587, an emphasis on a few different terms, but the seven basic ones are always there. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. Now, all of these terms that are described that are outside of the seven, they are within the seven. She chose to fetch those out of there and give emphasis on the ones noted on the first and second definitions. And then on the same second page of 587, which is in the glossary, she gives the definition of good. Now, good means God in some of the languages, just like mind means God in at least one language. So good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Omni, one, only, and all. So whenever omni is used with anything, there is nothing else that can be competition or opposition, because it's the one, only, and all. And everything with God is omni. Everything. So if we're going to start at the belief of birth, be aware that John asked Jesus, is there a material body? He said no. He said, is there a material universe? He said, no. We have the complete conversation, which is not in the King James Version, on our website. Now, if Jesus believed that matter was real, could he have healed the people that had a material problem? Everyone that has a problem has a material problem, because in spirit, everything is harmonious. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Everything is harmonious. Everything is balanced. Now, those terms of balance and harmony are a part of principle. And also, every one of the seven terms works with every other one of the seven terms. And I say the other seven instead of the other six, because the terms for any one of the seven synonymous terms that help describe it, and there's 350 of them. For example, intelligence is one of the descriptive words of mind. Enlightenment. Spirit, terms that are easy to think of, there is flawless and transparent. I mean, if it's flawless, it's going to be transparent. And if it's going to be flawless and transparent, it's going to be reflective. Soul, or the five senses that we think of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. But we have to think of the spiritual definitions. Every time we see, we should be reminding ourselves that we're seeing a spiritual reality, not a material fake. They can be called false flags, they can be fantasy, fake, artificial, whatever you want. Just realize it is the antithesis, the exact opposite, the antipode of reality. So instead of material sense, we've got to be only dealing with spiritual sense. All five of them. Spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling. So spiritual seeing is spiritual discernment. We can tell the difference between right and wrong. We can tell the difference between matter and spirit. We can tell the difference between evil and good, between life and death, between principle and chaos, between real spiritual love, where you're really caring for someone, not in a sensual way, but you really want them to, you care about their well-being, their total well-being. Mind represents creative ability, faculty, facility, capacity, power, performance, omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, omni-knowing. We have a list, I mentioned, was 350 words, so they're right around 50 apiece for each of the seven. And those approximately 50 words on each one of the seven enable us to understand the seven, just like has been described just now for a few of them. Some of them will be obvious to you, other ones you may be surprised. Most people don't realize that hearing means spiritual understanding. Well, if you get outside the realm of spirit, then you can just say understanding, but we should always be focusing on what we are able to comprehend looking through the lens of spirit, not matter. So that's basically the elements of the system, and then the operators are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And these are related in the book of Revelation called the Four Sides of the City. The Word means the facts about God. It's often referred to the Bible being the Word of God. The Christ means be like Jesus did when he would see someone that was ill or even dead. He did not think of them as being with a problem. He saw them as being God's perfect idea. And that's how he was able to heal. Einstein says you cannot solve a problem if you approach it on the same level as where the problem was discovered. That's an easy one to do, to remember that, and to follow it. You always have to be on a different level. Sometimes you have to go lower. The problem could very well be well hidden. So don't work on the symptom. That doesn't get you anywhere. You got to make sure you're not working on the symptom, but you're working on the root problem. You've got to dig down. And then you lift thought up above where the problem was. But you got to find the root of the problem first. And that's what the Christ is. It translates what you see to what the facts are about the true image and likeness of God. Now, we read what God is about. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, for several verses, tells us what man is about. And, of course, that's also in Science and Health and Mary Baker Eddy's other writings. She wrote 16 other books that are publicly authorized by her. A lot of other books have been written that are notes and so forth that she had in classes, and they can be very valuable. So we've got the Word and the Christ. We have to translate from what we see to the real spiritual nature. And if it's bad, we have to flip it. That's where we deny, and then we explain it away with the truth by focusing on the perfect, the reality. The third side to the city, and the third operator of divine metaphysics, it's all the same thing, is demonstrating it. And that's called Christianity. That's what we're supposed to be doing with our daily life. We're supposed to be recognizing the God truth, which is the only truth there is, about whatever the problem seems to be. And we're supposed to be translating like Jesus. He didn't see the imperfect man, he saw the perfect man. And then we put one and two together and we can demonstrate, prove, heal, come to a successful conclusion. And the fourth one is science. Science means it's like ascension. We're at a pure level so that we automatically see everything perfect. And us seeing it perfect brings forth healing. But we're already seeing it. So we're not really looking on the mortal level, on the relative level. We're at the absolute level. So the system of divine metaphysics is simple. Pick a word out of one of the seven. How about intelligence? That's a word of mind. How do we use it with another word of mind? How about power? Are we going to be intelligent in utilizing the laws of God about power? Are we going to try to use power to conduct evil activities? We have to really utilize intelligence in everything we do all the time. Whether it's something regarding spirit or soul or principle, life, truth, or love. So that's an example of how you can use mind working with mind itself and each of the other six. The system is really simple. Very simple. And it's very effective. We have a section on the website that's entitled Effective Healing, and it gives you the steps and how to bring forth a healing. You can really overcome any problem if you follow the steps sincerely, honestly, and with perseverance. The time it takes is up to you, because you have to transform anything in your thought that is imperfect and replace it with a perfect thought. And the textbook tells us why and how. And we remind you of what the textbook says in these prayer treatments. Remember, you have to use all of the senses if you want to get the most advancement and the quickest way to reach your goal, whatever it is. So we're going to attack the belief of having a material birth. And you can talk about any one of those five things that are the senses: seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, taste. Because that covers everything. That's how we identify everything. If we want a correct identification, we will use spiritual senses. That will assist in preventing problems before they ever come up. And obviously it will assist in curing if you've already got a problem. So let's go back to this belief of a material sense of birth and think about the quality of intelligence and apply it to an algorithm that includes the definition of God. And we have the definition of man from Genesis chapter 1. Be careful not to use Genesis chapter 2, because there's a mist that goes up. Can you see clearly in a mist? Well, the mist was all over every place, and that's when Adam and Eve got involved. Nothing mentioned about Adam and Eve before the mist. So beware of the mist. Flat out reject everything that happens in the mist, because it's not the truth about anything, or anyone, or any event. Nothing. If you think you have been born a sinner, then you're forgetting to read the Bible, where it says there went up a mist. The progeny of giving you a heritage of being born a sinner is based on Adam and Eve. And they were involved only after there was a mist. So you can just dismiss that idea that you were born a sinner. There is nothing in the Bible that says man was born a sinner. Man is the generic word used throughout civilizations as a generic word. It doesn't mean a personality. And if you're talking about the spiritual terms, then it should always be referred to as what man is, as referred to in Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26, and ending before the mist, which is in chapter 2, starting with, I think, verse 4. I think the mist was in verse 6 of chapter 2. So, we didn't really have a birth. There's no beginning of good. There's no beginning of spirit. The Bible says that about truth. Truth is always true. It's always been here. There is nothing new under the sun. That ought to tell you right there that you didn't have a material birth. That may be what it looks like. That may be what it feels like. That might be what you're told. That might be what you have expected, what other people expect. That might be what other people see. But you don't have to believe it. You don't have to accept it. You need to be like the flow of water. You can go over that false belief. You can go around it. But don't focus on it. You find what the root of the cause is and you declare that it's not true and the reason why, and then you go on about focusing on all of the things about God and man and anything else that is the topic. But you don't stay there. That's what the cross is. The cross is a symbol of carrying around a mortal belief. The universal belief that Jesus is dead or that Jesus was murdered. That was a belief. That was a psyop. He said that he was going to do it and raise himself up in 3 days. How are you going to raise something up that's dead? Lazarus wasn't dead. Tabitha wasn't dead. Jesus wasn't dead. Even in nature, you can't change the character. You have to see them for the truth in the beginning. You can't change the number 9 into a 7 or an 8. You can't change an error. You cannot improve an error. You have to replace it with the truth. If you need a 7, then replace a 6 with a 7. If you're looking at a 6 and you need a 7. You see, one of the great beauties of ideas is that they're infinite. They don't expire. They don't deteriorate. They don't become obsolete. True spiritual ideas are always in existence. Is it intelligent to believe that we were born from a woman's womb? Or do we look upon birth as a revelation of a new experience, not a new fact? Just revealing a different way. And it gives us an opportunity, like Jesus said when he saw the blind man that had been blind at birth. And the disciples said, who did sin, this one or his parents? He said, neither. He said, the reason that this has come to our attention is so that we can glorify God. That means we can heal it. That means we can see this man as perfect right now and never see that he could have ever been blind, because blindness is not a quality of God. That's the way we have to deal with a material sin to birth. That's not a quality of God. How about a birth that comes along with defects? That's what the title is about. It says, perfection is reality, not imperfection. It doesn't matter what the defect is. It's not real. It has no power unless we give it power. Unless we give it a presence. Are we going to give it a place in our consciousness? Are we going to give it a place in someone else's? Say, well, that's an evil man. When the Pharisee asked Jesus, what is the great commandment? In fact, he said it just that way. Which is the great commandment? The Pharisee was more intelligent than almost everybody is right now. Because everybody says the greatest or the greater. Great is a term used only as a singular purpose for being the absolute best. And therefore, God is the great I am. Not the greatest or the greater, the great, the only one, the only one. We have to refute that we ever had a material birth, because if we accept a material sense of birth, then we are accepting everything that goes with that lie. We might have been supposedly born and not had any visible defects, but we had to have, if we peek out and go downhill and die. The real man doesn't experience that. That's why Jesus resurrected and ascended. John ascended. Other ones have ascended. We cannot accept a defect for ourselves or anyone else whatsoever. I don't care what it's called. Some little baby might be born with cancer. Belief of cancer, that is. Born blind, born deaf, dumb, born with one leg instead of two. We have to refute anything at all that appears to be imperfection. And then we have to go to the root. And in this case, the root is God. Saying, well, this is the facts about man. On 591, the definition of man, by Mary Baker Eddy, is the infinite idea of spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Now that short one, that's on 591, and there's several pages, I think it's three pages, on the definition of man in the summary chapter, which is recapitulation. Chapter 14. And it's pretty near the middle. I mean, pretty near the beginning of it. It begins on 465 with the definition of God that was recited. So it's a couple of pages after that. Suppose you were born with a vision problem. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be anything. You can't see short distance, can't see long distance, you can't see average distance, or it's blurred or whatever. It doesn't matter what the problem is. If it's related to birth, you have to go back to the real history, and it eliminates a material birth. Genesis says very clearly, man is made in the image and likeness of God. Are we going to accept that? Are we going to confirm it by living that way, by thinking that way, by acting that way, by talking that way? I call it TSA, thought, speech, action. We have to address all things. Jesus said thinking about something is the same as doing it. That will make the size of the closet that people are not proud of, including myself. We all have a closet full of things that we would like to have lived our life differently and not have them in there. But we can take constructive action and clear it out. Because it only stays in there when we leave it in there. When we ignore it. Or conveniently forget about it. But it's up to us on how we're going to live our life. We can live it in spirit or in matter. There is no combining the two ideas. I like to reserve the word idea for spiritual things, So let's say a suggestion, a temptation for the evil part. We don't have to be a part of a so-called material birth. We don't have to be thinking it, talking about it, or doing anything about it, other than to eradicate it by exposing it. We each have a right to be free. The first quotation at the beginning of the textbook is by Jesus, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And the second quote tells us what we got to do about it. It's by Shakespeare. "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." So what happens when we have a spiritual line of thought, speech, and action? We eradicate the material. Because they can't live together. They can't live in concord. They can only live or survive, really. It's not living. It can only survive in chaos. The opposite of principle. Chaos. C-H-A-O-S. Chaos. It's so easy to handle it. So it doesn't matter what kind of defect there seemed to be at birth. Some kids have a problem with memory, balance. Everything can be overcome. I know of a case where the child was given a limitation. They said they'll never be able to read. And the parents went to a practitioner. And the practitioner said the first thing you want to do as soon as possible is teach them how to read. So starting about two, three years old, they taught them how to read. That individual became an avid reader and had a set of the classics and loved them. Another situation is one that was given a claim that they, well, I mentioned about the balance. They were healed of that and became great at acrobatics. Acrobatics. Well, you gotta have balance with that. Anything can be overcome. Anything and everything. And if you use the system, you will utilize what each of these terms mean and claim that as being the fact to reverse the problem. Frederick L. Rawson wrote a book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. There's a chapter in there called Applied Treatment. He names 1,315 different ailments and the opposite of it, which one would use to heal it. Now be clear, you can't just repeat words and expect a healing. We give the complete process on the website of how to heal. And the very first step is following the character of Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy and some of the other ones that are wonderful examples. So a second one that we have on the website is Joel Goldsmith. A third one is Wentworth Winslow. We have their writings, and in most cases we have MP3s. The tools are all there. You have to decide if you're going to pick them up and use them. So look at these characters. Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, these three that were mentioned, that in 15 minutes they had healings on every one of their cases. And what stands out about them and what connects them with each other? A characteristic about their individual daily thought, speech, and action. What is it that connects all great people that are able to reflect the high qualities of God. They live a life of giving. They live a life of giving. They give their entire being. They give up a sense of ego, and they're humble. Jesus washed his disciples' feet. The greatest feeling one can have is meeting someone else's need, and as much as possible, to do it anonymously. And you can do that pretty easy if you are helping someone out on the street. They're living on the street, homeless. Well, if you're a big celebrity where everybody knows what you look like, then it's not going to be so easy. You might have to, you know, do a little camouflage. But the idea is you don't want to get credit for it. That's the whole key of living a life of giving. It's not living a life so you will get credit for something. That's the opposite of being humble. That's ego. And ego is a killer. You will never succeed if you do things based on ego. That is blindness. You can give money away all day long. But if you want credit for it, you want them to know who's giving it to them, even sitting there waiting for a thank you. That's not why we do it. Jesus didn't get a thank you from many of his people that he healed. Not even a thank you. Two words. That is not our concern. We're not in the thank you department. We're in the giving department. We give it out intelligently. Everything. Everything. Don't give them your clothes that you were going to throw away or give to the thrift shop. Give them fresh new things. Give them what you would like to have, what you wear, if you're going to give them clothes. Give them the food you would eat. If you're going to provide shelter for them, make it suitable. The more you give, the more you are going to be living the life of love. And if you don't live the life of love, forget about healing success. You're going to be going up a very difficult road. And it's probably going to be a dead end. You can try, see what happens. But all you have to do is study what other people have done to be successful. What did Sam Walton do? The founder of Walmart. Bring back anything, anytime, for any reason, no questions asked. Or we may ask you a question, why are you bringing it back, just so they'll have a record. Maybe it's defective. They don't want to be selling things that are defective, so if they've got more on the shelf, they might feel they need to take them off. Send them back to the manufacturer. That is the way we want to be. My dad told me, the best advertising in the world is to make an unhappy customer happy. It doesn't matter what it costs you. You have to do it. If you don't do it, then they are the most expensive customer in the world because they're not going to be sharing their wonderful experience about you. They're going to be experiencing. They're going to tell you their experience about how bad you are and never use your company. It's the most expensive advertising you can ever have, and it's a failure. If you let an unhappy customer continue without solving the problem, you have to focus on the customer all the time. You know what the solution is for procrastination? Live a dynamic life. Procrastination is a form of death. Anything that is a delay from getting good things done is the opposite of life. If you want to have more beauty in your life, you need to express it. If you want to have more intelligence from the people you're dealing with, you have to express it. Wentworth Winslow wrote 4 books. They're all very short titles, three or four words, and they all have the word God in them. And in one of them, he has a story about someone that is down at the end of his rope. He's out of everything. No food, shelter, and clothing. So he comes to the end of his possibilities, and he decides that he'll go and talk to God. So he goes up to the pearly gates, knocks on the door, an angel answers, and the angel says, "May I help you?" And he said, "Boy, I hope so. I'm out of everything. I don't know how I'm going to live, even to get back to my home from here." The angel said, "I don't think we can help you. But I thought you could help everybody, solve every problem." The angel says, "I don't think we have what you're looking for." I mean, this guy was livid. He didn't know what to do. So the angel said, "Well, wait a minute, please." And he went to talk to God, or she, I guess, whoever it was. He said, the individual said, "We've got someone at the door, and they're out of everything. They need everything, food, shelter, and clothing, a job, happiness." And God said, "We have plenty of everything." She said, "But he's looking for material things, and not only that, but material things that don't last, that you can run out of. And we don't have anything that you can run out of, and we don't have anything material. Everything we have is spiritual, and it lasts forever, and the quantity is infinite. But he wants what he had already that he ran out of." God said, "Tell him this. Tell him, we have everything that will meet your need, but the problem is, it's not going to replace what you ran out of. And what we have will last forever and solve your problem and solve it permanently, but it's not what you had that you want to replace." God is all intelligence. We have the capacity to reflect the intelligence of God, but if we're going to go to God and define what we need, and think of it in material terms, we can't get anywhere. In fact, God doesn't even have ears. Remember, God is incorporeal. We're wasting our time if we're talking to God. The only possible benefit we can get out of acting like we're talking to God, I mean, God's invisible. So the only possible benefit is that we are recognizing there is something that is much more grandiose than we are with our little ego. Something that is perfect, which we're not, if we have these problems, because we're thinking that we are born a sinner and that we're a loser. Instead of confirming what the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, and Mary Baker Eddy on page 591 tells us about the definition of man. And we're forgetting all about the definition of God, where God is infinite. Mind tells us that God is infinite. And everything about God is spirit. Everything is spiritual, from our standpoint, not material. And the key is that when we think about the spiritual, we will have our so-called daily needs met. But it's a mental block that we're putting up for ourselves by not getting out of the material realm in our thought, speech, and action. If we don't do that, there's no future of a major improvement or a healing. Because you're not going to heal with matter. If you want to pursue that, then Christian Science is not for you. Christian Science is the only religion that satisfies Einstein's own definition. Einstein says, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. Christian Science is both science and religion. It's the highest science that exists everywhere. The highest, the most pure science is Christian Science, because it's the science of how to heal. We teach in these prayer treatments how to heal. We teach on the website how to heal. Or let's put it this way. We offer the information. But you really can't teach adults. You give them the tools and they can learn on their own. They can teach themselves. But adults don't learn just from someone telling them something. Because you have to make it your own. And we explain this on the website. You have to start off with a receptive attitude that, yes, I've had problems throughout my life, and my closet is full of a bunch of garbage of mistakes that I've done, and I would like to improve my thought, speech, and action so that I can clean those out, solve whatever problems can be solved, and I would like to live a life like Jesus. That doesn't mean you have to wear sandals and have no transportation other than walking or riding a donkey. It means you need to have the spiritual qualities of Jesus, the spiritual qualities of Mary Baker Eddy, the spiritual qualities of Frederick L. Rassen and Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith. Mary Baker Eddy was attacked all the time, but she always gave back love. She reminded herself every hour of the day to self-exam to make sure she was not thinking ill thoughts about anyone, anytime, for any reason. There's an article in her index called The Secret. That may awaken you, but you have to be receptive or you won't hear the message. All thought, speech, and action goes out into the universal thought. It's like a big, huge reservoir. And we can tune in to anything we want to tune into. You could tune in and listen to Jesus in his original voice. But you have to be on the same level in order to do it. And the sooner that each of us get on the path going in the right direction, the sooner we will be able to communicate with God, as expressed in the laws of the universe, which are His laws. They're not the laws of nature. If you're going to think about the laws of nature, then you're back into a material realm. If you see something that is really beautiful, is that a material sense? No. Beauty is a spiritual quality. How about some engineering feat that was absolutely perfect? Like the wealthiest man in the world sent that rocket up in the air, spaceship, brought it back, landed it in the launching pad. In fact, just recently on X, the Falcon was just brought back from a trip, landed exactly where they wanted it to land. Not destroying it like everyone else that sends things into space, and they come back and they're demolished. Or they end up being floating around in space forever, maybe blown up in pieces or whatever. No, he said there's a better way to do it. And there's a big savings of money by being able to reuse the rocket or the spaceship or whatever it is that is the thing that he sent away and brought it back. We have all the tools, and everything we need is available. And it's up to you, when you are tired of going up and down with, you know, a failure one day and a success another day and a failure another day, going ahead one step and going back two, or going ahead three and coming back two, or going ahead one and coming back one. When you're tired of that deviation from constancy and consistency of steady progress, when you're tired of not having that, then maybe that's what it needs for you, or for anyone, me, anyone, to say there's got to be a better way. Jesus healed 10 lepers. How many thanked him? One. One. One out of 10. So if you get a thank you, one out of every 10 people that you help them out of a crisis, then you're on line with Jesus. The best is to don't expect anything, because you're not in the business of expecting something to come to you, even a thank you for what you do for them. You could save their life. Well, that's basically what Jesus did with the 10 lepers. If you're living as a leper, boy, that's not much of a life. It is up to us. We are so much better off than the people were that lived any time prior to right now, because we have more experiences that we can research and learn about and go forward as a catalyst by using those as a catalyst. But again, we have to make everything our own. One of the steps in learning how to do effective healing is to record your own voice. I've had people tell me, well, I'm happy to do everything else, but I'm not going to record my own voice. I say, well, it's up to you. We tell you what works. If you want to cut out something that's going to be 80% of your success, that's up to you. If you take any advanced classes in any subject from really a top person, they're going to repeat what they tell you two or three times. And they'll probably do it in a different way, but they're telling you the same fact. And if you go up and ask them, say, I know that you've got a reputation of being one of the most intelligent people in this area of expertise, but why do you say it three times? Or whatever they do. I mean, if they're really good teachers, they will say it at least three times. One that I ask about, he said, well, if I tell you once, you'll forget it. If I tell you twice, you'll remember it longer. If I tell you three times, you'll remember it longer than that. But you're still going to lose it. I said, well, what do you recommend so that you will always remember it? Nobody had ever asked him. No one had ever asked him. I mean, and the price of these seminars were outrageous in terms of, you know, U.S. dollars. Well, they were high, let's put it that way. The value of them was excellent, but they certainly weren't a low price thing. He said, you have to do it. And you have to do it all the time. You need to incorporate it as a part of your business where you're doing it all the time. And then you will remember it, and everybody involved with that will remember it. Otherwise, it's wasted time. So how do you think we can remember the wonderful healings that Jesus did? And the parables and everything in the textbook and the other 16 books of Mary Baker Eddy and the writings of F.L. Rawson, the writings of Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith. Remember, those are the three that had 15-minute appointments, and by the end, the healing was complete. And Mary Baker Eddy is the star of everyone. Because she is the one that discovered the science of the healings of Jesus. Everyone else thought they were miracles. Until she came along 1,541 years after the Council of Nicaea in 325 A.D. when the healing stopped. Yeah, Christianity went on for another 300 years almost. After Jesus ascended from 33 A.D. to 325 A.D. And at 325 A.D. in the Council of Nicaea, we've got it on our website. In fact, we have probably the best Bible scholar next to Mary Baker Eddy on our website. And he wrote 10 Bible lessons. It tells you everything you need to know about the Bible. In 169 pages, which is a summary and an index, and then the backup to understand everything is hundreds and hundreds of pages that he gives you, and these are references, books of the Bible, texts from the Bible, to understand the Bible. But it's the best you'll ever find. He was a doctorate of chemistry. And they have to be very organized and structured because it's very intricate details, very systematic research. And he taught Sunday school for 35 years, and he was composing this book, kept all of his notes. He didn't have I don't know whether he had a purpose of writing the book in the beginning, but just because he was very organized and kept everything in a very comprehensive fashion. Anyway, he gave us a wonderful book, 10 Bible Lessons. And if you don't know who Bliss Knapp is, he was tutored by Mary Baker Eddy from the age of about 7 or 8. The only one that is known to have been tutored by Mary Baker Eddy from a young age like that, 7 or 8 years old. Imagine what impact that had. Well, from a financial standpoint, which certainly shouldn't be number one on our list, But when he went around the corner, which was about, I think, around 1950 or so, it's on our website. He's an author, Bliss Knapp, K-N-A-P-P. Anyway, he was worth, I think it was 300 or 350 million. And today that would be, I think it was I checked it out one time. I think it's 4.3 billion at the just average interest rate. Not any investment rate, just an average interest rate. 4.3 billion. How much time did he spend on investments? None. None. None at all. He was led to be involved in investments at an early age, made the investments, and then forgot about them his whole career. So 4.3 billion is what he was worth in today's dollars. 350 million in the old dollar, in the, you know, back when he passed on 75 years ago. Anyway, he is the greatest teacher you could have next to Mary Baker Eddy. Probably. Although, certainly, Frederick L. Rawson has got to be right up there at the top. And both of the other ones, too. I mean, they all had 15-minute appointments. So, are we going to follow a life like these people had? Because that's what's required. We have all the tools, but you gotta also have the spirit, the spiritual life, the life of giving. Now, how can you give? Certainly money, but that's not the only solution. It needs to be a whole life of giving. Everything you're involved in, give. You go to the store and you check out, make sure that you really appreciate the clerk being there so that you could, they could assist you. You ask anybody for something that you need in the store, do you thank them? Do you see an elderly person that needs help, maybe loading things in their car out in the parking lot, maybe somebody walking through a store that has their hands full of groceries and they're about to drop them because they thought they were only going to pick up one or two things and they ended up picking this thing up and that thing up? Have you offered to get them a basket, or if you've got an empty basket, give it to them? There's a situation where a fella came out of a store, and he was approached by somebody that walked up to him and asked him for money. And the guy looked okay. He was in work clothes, but he looked clean and so forth. Looked like he was ready to go to work. He said, "Why do you need money?" He said, "I lost my job, and the last 2 days I've been out of money and I can't eat. And I don't have any gas for my motorcycle to go around and look for work or follow up on anything that might be advertised on these billboards." And so he said, "Well, what kind of work do you do?" He said he was a handyman. He said he could fix anything. He said he really enjoys doing the work. He knows electrical, plumbing, carpentry. And it just so happens that the fellow that he solicited for a donation had a list of things he needed to have done. And he couldn't find anyone that could do them. So he ended up going to his house, picking up his vehicle, it was close by, and taking it to the gas station, and then going up to his house and showed him the list. And the fellow said he could do everything on the list. He ended up working for him for 3 months. And at the end of the 3 months, and everything was done, He had another job lined up that he could go to right away. It's obvious that one needs to use intelligence in everything they do. Wisdom. Knowing. They need to know what they're doing. One might think that they should give to these big charities. UNICEF is one that's been advertising very heavy on the internet. A fraudulent organization. They're part of the United Nations. It's a money laundering operation. The Department of Government Efficiency, which was set up by the wealthiest man in the world, and it was all coordinated and encouraged by the President of the United States, and it was to do exactly what the name indicates. Find out where the waste is in the government and eliminate it. They had no idea they were going to run into total fraud everywhere. Billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud every year. They found that nonprofit organizations worldwide were getting our tax dollars, the U.S. tax dollars, and it was being utilized for money laundering, paying off our Congress and, you know, local politicians and foreign people. And somewhere between 0 and 5% actually got filtered down to where the people they were advertising for, the children they were advertising for to help, actually had any benefit go to them. Between 0 and 5%. Between 95 and 100% of the money collected from our tax dollars were being spent to fund all of these illegitimate people. They weren't getting down to the organization they were advertising for at all. It was total fraud. I wouldn't give any money to big organizations. Red Cross, on the list of fraud. Clara Barton, who started the American Red Cross, was a very fine woman. She studied Christian Science and made very wonderful compliments about Christian Science and Mary Baker Eddy. She lived in Mary Baker Eddy's day, 150 years ago, 125 years ago. But it's all corrupted. So, you need to be very intelligent about how you give money. And of course, you need to be intelligent about, you know, letting someone come in your home that you don't know anything about. If you're a woman, that's different than being a man. There are tons of ways to give. Look for people that are in wheelchairs. People that have severe problems. I mean, they're out on the street. Some of them are at the entrance of grocery stores. The very first step is to live a life of giving. This prayer treatment will close with an excellent prayer by Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her top students in her last class of the Metaphysical College in 1898. She hand-selected everybody that was permitted to be in that class. On the third day, she assigned them to go out and be involved in a healing and come back the next morning and report it. They all did, the whole class. She gave them seven prayers. They are called the Diapason of Heaven, and they're focusing on each of the seven synonymous terms. Since this prayer treatment was related directly to soul, which was the spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, the prayer that is on the subject of soul will be recited. After Amen is said to the prayer, if there are any other thoughts that occur, I will add those right after. And they should be no more than a minute or two if there are any thoughts that occur to me at all. Here is the prayer by Mary Baker Eddy, Diapason of Heaven on Soul. We must hold soul in consciousness only as a sacred name for God. We have to rise above the belief that soul is an invisible personality residing in a fleshly form, with a personal identity. Soul must be recognized as a name for God, and a name by which God is to be worshipped. We have to take the interpretation of soul as a personality out of subjective thought and replace it with the true sense. We should declare often, there is only one soul, and that is my infinite, incorporeal, supreme God. Soul is my God, and my God is soul. Amen. The thought just occurred, you are invited to make contact with us and ask any question at all about the Bible or any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, or about Christian Science or the System of Divine Metaphysics, or anything that is in this or any other prayer treatment that we have posted on the website, and there's over 400 of them. Please click on the contact form, which is in the footer and in the menu near the bottom of the menu, and follow the instructions that are in there. Today is April 12, 2026, and it is 18:35 on the 24-hour clock. And the topic of this prayer treatment is all seven terms for God. Perfection is reality, not imperfection. Thank you for listening. The end.